You're the big, big boss. You tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job. But I don't like your attitude.
Hey, Tech, you know, welcome to the world of those old brick and mortars that everybody just learned to hate, love to hate, right? Because, oh, they had control and they were monopolies. And now here we are talking about monopolies. You know, so Tech used to be that real wild thing out there and, you know, sticking it to the man and the whole thing. And now really all it's become is just another version of monopoly and people starting to get afraid of its power. And now here comes, you know, this blockchain technology that takes that power away.
Now tell me, who do you think you are? Besides a person who happens to be in charge.
This is Paul Maslany bringing you the Leadership in Tech podcast. This week we are discussing Bitcoin, the idea of blockchain technology. Is it the future? Is decentralization the way to go? Tune in to find out exactly what Zach and Errol think of this from their tech and leadership perspectives. This is the 33rd episode of the Leadership in Tech podcast, and the 7th episode of our second season in production. Stick around after the show for updates, guest info, announcements, and more. The Technology On-Ramp is proud to present the Leadership in Tech podcast, episode 33, Bitcoin and Decentralization.
Maybe you got lucky, maybe you worked real hard. And just maybe that doesn't make you smart.
All right, what are we talking about? Here's what struck me. I'll tell you what struck me a couple of days ago when I was at your house and your mom was there. And how old is your mom?
80.
Your mom is 80. She was sitting at the kitchen table and she started asking about blockchain and Bitcoin.
Yep.
How crazy is that?
Well, you know, it's crazy, but it's not crazy because she's hearing Bitcoin make money. And then she's heard somewhere this, whatever this blockchain thing is it related to Bitcoin? But Bitcoin make money. Bitcoin make money. But will they steal your money? And so, yeah, it's on the radar of everybody because, you know, people feel like it's a way that they can make money. And she wanted to know. And then she wasn't sure what this blockchain thing was. So you had to explain that to her. But that was on the tip of her tongue as well.
And so, I mean, if it's permeated, like, our parents, I mean, that means it's everywhere.
Well, and that means we need to talk about it. Because if my 80-year-old, my 80-year-old mother has something in common, you know, other than the love of her, you know, 21-year-old grandchild, they also have Bitcoin and blockchain in common now. So I think we need to talk about something that's spanning generations.
I feel like what you're going to ask next is for me to give a definition of like blockchain because you say I'm a tech guy.
Well, that's what I say. Sometimes I wonder. But generally speaking, I believe you. mostly because you've been knocking it out of the park with your leadership assessments this season. So I'm like, well, maybe I need to start learning more about tech. But yeah, go ahead and for the listeners who are, you know, kind of on the more leadership side of this podcast, not the tech side, lay it on us. Blockchain or Bitcoin.
Even give the best definition. I mean, I'm learning myself. So I recently acquired a client in this space that does these technologies. And so I've been immersing myself in them myself. And I can't give you an amazing definition yet. Sort of where I'm at, the way I think about it is everybody knows what Microsoft Excel is, right? You have like an Excel spreadsheet. Imagine if there was an Excel spreadsheet on like 50,000 computers and the Excel spreadsheet, you know, had the same stuff in it on all 50,000 computers. And over 51% of the computers agreed that this Excel spreadsheet said the same thing because they all talk to each other. If that's true, then whatever the Excel spreadsheet says is true. And that's sort of what blockchain is. It's a distributed, decentralized network of computers that all agree that the Excel spreadsheet says the same thing. And maybe it says Errol has $10 or Errol has 5 Bitcoins. Whatever it says, all the computers agree. That's what it says. And so that's what it says.
So that sounds, though, I mean, is it decentralized or is it centralized? If all the computers have the same thing on it and they're looking for agreement, you know, because I know...
Your computer, it's my computer, it's Amazon's computer, it's your mom's computer. All the computers are not controlled by any one person. They're just lots of computers and they all talk to each other and they'll agree or disagree on what's in that Excel spreadsheet.
Interesting. And then to what end? To make a fact? I mean, so what's...
Yeah, well, so that's sort of how I think of the technology of blockchain. But then there's applications on top of that. And so the most popular one is Bitcoin, which is a currency, a cryptocurrency. And so if the Excel spreadsheet says who has what Bitcoins and all the computers agree on who has what Bitcoins, then we all have those Bitcoins.
So, and so from a decentralized, centralized standpoint, what's the, you know, what are we looking at now? So that's a currency or a form of currency or a form of some way to make money that the banks do or do not control.
They do not control. Nobody controls it. Nobody controls Bitcoin because it's just spread across these, I said 50,000, but it's way more than that. It's spread across these computers. And, you know, depending on how many computers you have in play, you have, you know, maybe a larger portion of the network, but nobody has 51%. So nobody controls it.
And how does this affect, I guess, how does this affect the banks?
I mean, they want to figure out how to leverage. I mean, well, so a lot of ways. So it's super complicated. So I gave the simplest sort of example of how I'm starting to think about it.
Right.
I mean, the most important part is that if you look at the technology itself, so if we call it blockchain, and we just say it's a decentralized technology. It's a decentralized way to build the internet, in a sense, which you could compare to the way the internet is currently built, which is centralized.
Right.
If you have a website, right, you have a website for Leader 193. That's at Squarespace, right? I think, and so yeah. Squarespace sort of controls your website.
Right.
It's a central place that controls your website.
Right.
The whole internet is built around those principles everywhere. Google controls half the internet.
Right.
Amazon, maybe the other half. With blockchain, nobody controls it. So applications like Bitcoin and other things that can be built with blockchain technology are built with in a decentralized mindset where the data is spread across anyone's computers and it's permissionless. Anybody can see the data. And so you don't have any controlling authorities. There's no Googles or Amazons or banks that, you know, are holding the master copy of the Excel spreadsheet. It's literally out there everywhere. And so it's truly decentralized. And so the theme of decentralization is sort of the biggest driver of this technology, I think, because we all dig that, right? We all are scared of, you know, massive centralization. It's a little creepy to think that the entire tech world is now, you know, mostly comprised of Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Google, Microsoft,
right?
And so blockchain moving the other way. Blockchain means Google, you don't get to say what's in the Excel spreadsheet. Errol's and Zach's computers get to say what's in the Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, I mean.
And Bitcoin is just one application of that, but then there's supposed to be others.
Right. So I love this on a lot of different levels. You know, the first is the first point goes to points that we made in earlier episodes of, hey, tech, you know, welcome to the world of those old brick and mortars that everybody just learned to hate, loved to hate, right? Because, oh, they had control and they were monopolies. And now here we are talking about monopolies. You know, so tech used to be that real wild thing out there and, you know, sticking it to the man and the whole thing. And now really all it's become is just another version of monopoly and people starting to get afraid of its power. And now here comes, you know, this blockchain technology that takes that power away, you know? So I love that. I think most people, you know, obviously except Google and the people who are now hoarding the power, they love it. But, you know, so that's one thing that I just think continues to astound me in today's world now that technology and these tech companies are right where all the older companies are, you know, so they're no longer.
Yeah.
The tech companies are no longer the, you know, the cool guys and bucking the system. They're very much part of the system. They are very much, quote unquote, the man right now. So.
Yeah, I read two articles that supported what you said. One said that is Silicon Valley the new Wall Street, and are people that work in Silicon Valley now like ashamed because they're the new bankers, right? Which is a little shameful. There's a connotation of like, you know, the bankers, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so is Silicon Valley sort of the new that's what you just said. And there's another really good article, and we'll put it on the show notes page, that, you know, historically every technology over time started sort of decentralized, it became a monopoly, right? Like the wire telegram, and then the phone, and then the internet, and
right.
People think that blockchain might not follow that path, and the biggest banks and the largest organizations in the world want it to, so everybody's trying to figure out how they can, like, you know, get blockchain for themselves, right? How they can be the only ones to control blockchain,
right?
While the, you know, people in the movement and the people, it's a lot of it's open source, and the tech people and, you know, all the people that work on it really believe this might be the technology that can fight through and stay decentralized. And so that's sort of the battle that's going on right now. But, you know, that plays into the hype.
Yeah. You know, it'll be a battle, right? Because, you know, now those big tech companies will want to somehow get control of blockchain, right? So
right.
That's just the way it goes down. So I just think it's funny, again, how, all right, so, and this is not to bang on Google, we just use Google as an example because they are the preeminent technology company in the world. But just because now you guys have bright colors and you have ping pong tables and, you know, you have bikes that you ride around your main headquarters, that doesn't make you different. That just means you have those things at your office, right? What you do is what you do. And now what you're doing is controlling. And, you know, people eventually don't like that. So I continue to marvel at the similarities now, but from a decentralized standpoint, you know, decentralized control is really also from a leadership standpoint, that philosophy is the way to go, right? Nobody ever said.
Well, that's what I want to talk about it.
Yeah, nobody ever said a fully centralized command and control system is the way to go, because it's not, you know, and just well, to, go ahead, yeah.
But that's what we think about, right? Like, so when you say, when I think of the military, I think of centralized command and control.
Yeah, and some of it can be, you know, there's enough wiggle room in military operations to either have it centralized or decentralized. And that's why some operations and, you know, some initiatives go awry and some are amazing. So in the SEAL teams, the best leaders operate on a fully decentralized command and control system. So what does that mean? So that means that, you know, the SEALs were in Afghanistan or Iraq, okay? And there is somebody in charge of all the SEALs there, okay? And they're running operations in different cities and, you know, in coordination with different military units. And the person in control can go one or two ways. You know, they're gonna determine, they're gonna approve operations, and that's fair. You can't have individual smaller units running amok and just saying, hey, we're just going to operate without anybody knowing where we're going or what we're doing. Somebody's got to know. Somebody's got to approve that operation. So from that standpoint, some form of centralization is important, okay, because it keeps control. But then you say, okay, if you're going to operate in this region, you can initiate operations that I need to approve. Okay, so you say, okay, you know that battle space. You tell me, you write up something. Here's the operation we want to do. Here's the series of operations we want to do. And I'll approve it or disapprove it. But once I approve it, now I leave it to you on how you do that. We have guidelines, right? We know what our parameters are and how we operate. And, you know, we won't get into those. So this isn't out of control wildness. There's our left and right parameters on what you're able to do. And those are very clearly stated in, you know, the commander's intent or whatever it is. And now you go operate. I allow you to make those decisions inside of that battle space. Now there's somebody who's in charge of the operation in that battle space. Well, he might have 2 platoons of SEALs or 3 platoons of SEALs under him. Okay, and now, or her now. So now it's incumbent upon that commander to say, okay, here are our operations that are approved. Alpha platoon, you have this one. Bravo platoon, you get this one. Charlie platoon, you get this one. And now inside of that operation, I give you full authority to make decisions. You need to let me know what you're doing because my job is to keep track and deconflict and work with these other units. So that's my job. But now you tell me what you're doing. I don't dictate to you what you're doing. So those calls you make on the ground, you know, the initial plan said for you all to be in this building or in this area. But you know what? If you have to change that, you go ahead and change it and just keep me apprised. Because I authorize you to make those. I'm decentralizing this decision-making process. I'm letting you operate within the parameters, but within those parameters, you make your own decisions. And that's how great things get done. So then we talk about leadership up and down. It requires communication. So if I'm one of those platoons, I have to say, you know, hey, Zach, Commander Zach, you know, we were scheduled to have our surveillance point in this building, in this city, but we're moving to this building. This building isn't working, so we're going to move to this building, and we'll let you know when we're there. And your job, right, I'm Commander Zach, and you go, Roger, go. Let me know when you're there. Now, I've got this whole big board that I'm looking at, or that you're looking at, and you're letting the Army unit know, okay, my guys are moving from this area to this area. Now, everybody's aware of what's happening. We're not questioning that decision, because that's a decision on the ground. That's decentralized. You know, when I hear decentralized, I think good things, right? That's giving people autonomy to act. But it doesn't mean lack of communication, and it doesn't mean just running off and doing something crazy on your own. So that, from the standpoint of the blockchain thing that we're talking about, being decentralized, my only concern is, are there left and right limits? Are there parameters that blockchain is operating inside? Because, you know, we have to be concerned about just complete anarchy. You know, we just can't be the Wild West. There's got to be some control, but there's got to be a lot of autonomy. So what's your thought on going back to the tech side? You know, are there parameters? Can it be something that's out of control and run amok?
I mean, it's so complicated. So the technology is so complicated. So I probably can't answer that. I think that's the struggle, right? When people talk about Bitcoin, it's inherently risky, because it's so new. And so could the market get wiped out tomorrow with something that no one's thought of? You know, there's an article yesterday, maybe yesterday or the day before, that, it wasn't Bitcoin, but it was a different blockchain, cryptocurrency called, Ethereum. That's a different network. It's an open source network. Somebody made a mistake, and $300 million got locked away. $300 million of people's money got locked away, to where nobody could access it. And so, that's scary, right? They're going to have to figure out a way to fix it. because it's such a new platform. It's brand new. It's like one day old, I feel like, lots of things could happen. And so it's risky and it's new, but there's a lot of people, like super, like the smartest people in the world are working on it every day, and they believe that it is the future.
Wow. So it's still like you have a, you know, in the world of tech, you feel like you only have a rudimentary understanding of what blockchain is, but obviously in the regular world with everybody included, you have a high understanding of it. And I just can't even fathom, like, what does that mean? $300 million were lost. Where did it go? Who's responsible for that? Right. And that's the thing about decentralized command. There's still somebody overall responsible. So my question, and say what you want about where the tech companies today are going and kind of really hoarding control. If something goes wrong, you know, Congress was able to pull in Facebook in those social media sites about, you know, whatever the accusations were about fake news and all that stuff. There was somebody that they could point the finger to and say, you all are responsible for this. You four people are responsible for this. Who on this blockchain thing?
Well, a lot of these blockchain projects are open source. And so there's these bands of developers that work on the projects who understand it thoroughly. So I have a rudimentary understanding. There's people that are experts and understand every bit of it. They're essentially who you're talking about, the people that are in control, because they write the code. They, you know, are making all the plans. They're architecting the future features to solve scalability problems and, you know, any other architectural problems. So the people who understand the tech the most are in control, but there's no barrier to who that can be. I can't go into Facebook and become an SVP there,
right,
and have any kind of control without being hired and XYZ. For blockchain, there's an open source project. I can decide to contribute tomorrow. I can learn every outline of every program. You could become an expert and have a seat at that table, be one of the people that's in control. So in that sense, that's a little bit more open as well, because it's an open source project.
So again the software, the blockchain platform, is just a vehicle for companies to use in a kind of decentralized kind of way. So for example, this Ether thing where everybody lost their money, there's somebody who's in charge of Ether? Is there somebody who's in charge of Bitcoin?
No, it's an open Ether. So Ethereum is an open source project. And so there's, and not everybody lost their money. 300 million got locked away. So like, that's just a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the money that's on these networks.
That's amazing.
And they'll get it back. They'll figure out how to get it back. So it was just an accident, but it goes to the risk of things happening. You know, that you wouldn't hear that happening with a bank, at least not this day and age. But it's an open source network. There's councils and steering bodies, and you know, there's like a little bit of governance being formed on top. But it's still all open, so anyone can participate, right? If you want to be in it, you're in it. And you can get connected to the community. And so it's not a closed system like Facebook or Google where you have to get hired.
Right.
And, you know, tasked by the one person who controls the shares in the company. It's an open project.
I mean, in theory, I think I like it, right? Just because it goes against that overwhelming control and monopoly and, you know, companies just getting too big and too powerful. So I think I like it. And it sounds like you like it in theory, right?
Well, I'm learning. So I think we're going to get some guests who are like really strong in this space. And I think we're going to have them explain it to us on a deeper level. But what I do dig is the idea of decentralization. I mean, working with this new client, I see that the culture of their team really embraces the decentralization that the technology is sort of founded on. And it goes to a lot of the things we've talked about, remote teams, right? Large groups of people that are working on really complex problems in different areas, kind of like your Navy SEAL example, mm-hmm. And, you know, having freedom to operate in those little pockets. And so, you know, if blockchain is the future, right, and if the entire world is moving to decentralized sort of applications, right, that has a profound impact on the way we build those applications and how we work. And so that means we have to move to decentralized too. And so it's good to hear you say that, you know, from a leadership standpoint, decentralization is the way to go.
Yeah, it is. And what's really fun about this conversation is, though, the, you know, you used to act in a dangerously decentralized structure, right? You didn't want to know anything until the day something was due, which led to, you know, it just leads to a lot of problems, right? Because we talk about the difference between micromanaging and micro-knowledging. You were doing neither. Now, you are still highly decentralized, but you're micro-knowledging, right? You have your finger on the pulse of what's happening. So you can anticipate problems well in advance. You are allowing your people to act with it, you know, to act within their personality. Whether it's, we will speak once a week, but we will speak because I need to know what's happening. I need updates. Or we'll speak every day because that's what you like. That's fine. Whatever you want, we can do it because I'm going to work to your personality. But I'm not telling you how to do what you're doing. I'm giving you the task. Now you use your own, you know, ingenuity and your self-expression to go ahead and finish that task. But I will get updates because I need to get updates because I need to make sure that if there's a problem, we get it early and we make those small corrections, which we talked about, I think, last week, not those big, huge 90-degree corrections, which just disrupt everything. So in the world of decentralized command, you had to go actually put more restrictions on how you did that, not less, because too little restrictions were, you know, were all the problems that we've discussed that you ran into in the past. Just a little bit of guidance, a little bit, just putting some right and left barriers and a communication plan in place, and now you still have a highly functional, decentralized command and control system that works for everybody, for you. Most people, though, need to go the other way. They need to loosen that stuff. They need to trust. You know, leaders need to say just that. Here's the objective. You're in charge of it. Here are your parameters for how you can operate. Go. Your decisions are yours. I back them up. I trust you to make decisions. You just need to keep me informed of what you're doing, just in case I see something in the bigger picture that you don't see. And then we can make adjustments. You know, that's, you have the innate ability, which is so easy to help people become better leaders, when your natural ability and thought is to say, I want people to exercise their own ideas and make their own decisions and even fail a little bit just to learn. That's a great quality to have. That's a very natural quality that that's hard for people in leadership positions to take on, because then they still have to take on the overall responsibility. So if your project fails, right, you allow your people to operate the way you have them operate, which I think is great. But ultimately, if your project fails, what are you going to do? Tell your customer, well, it was my coder. He really messed that up. They're not going to care. They're going to be like, I hired you, Zach. You're in charge of salt. Right. What do I care of what your coder did? You failed. And that's the reality. And that's why people have such a hard time with decentralizing their leadership and their command and control, because they have to be responsible. They feel like they have to do everything. They have to micromanage every move. So I was just with somebody the other day, and we were talking a lot about this, and they were going to go through their moving plants, right? So they're expanding, which is great. So we were just talking about a planning process for the move and, you know, all the things we've talked about in the past, you know, identifying what your actions are, clearly what the goals are, who's in charge of what, and how they're going to communicate it. And one guy actually said to me, well, if I delegate this authority down, how do I have control over that? And I said, well, you have overall control, but at some point you have to trust that those people know what they're doing. And you know, he kind of rolled his eyes. I said, well, are they trained? In theory, are they supposed to know exactly what they're doing? He says, yeah, we trained them. I said, okay, then you've got to, you know, it's one thing if you're going to delegate something down to somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. That's irresponsible. That's wrong on every level. But if you've trained these people and you've told them what they need to tell them, you have to trust them. And that was, I was shocked, even though as much as I've seen this, I was shocked at this individual's, he was just aghast, like, oh, you mean we've got to trust them to do their job without me doing it myself? And it's going to be hard for him. So we actually talked about decentralizing that command and control. And it was an issue. So yeah, this was supposed to be more about blockchain, but I've just decided to go on and on about decentralized leadership.
No, I love it. So, you know, so this is, we should do a couple more episodes on this theme. And like I mentioned before, we'll get some really good guests. And I think the show notes page this week may be, you know, some of the most valuable show notes ever, because we'll throw a bunch of links to some of these articles that we mentioned so that people can see. It's such a, like, blockchain itself is such a deep topic that it's like, you know, it's just a rabbit hole you can go down, and like, it just gets more and more complex. But the decentralized leadership and the sort of way of thinking, that the culture, I think is fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's something that's so aligned with what we're talking about every week.
Yeah. So good deal. A new technology that's decentralized. We love decentralized. It's a little scary. We like sticking it to the man, right? We like sticking it to those huge conglomerates and saying, no, you don't control everything. And then we can put it to some leadership. To be continued.
This is the Leadership in Tech podcast, and that was episode number 33, Bitcoin and Decentralization. If you want to know more about the show or the Tech OnRamp, go to www.techonramp.com. You can also find all of Season 1 and Season 2 so far, as well as our blog, our newsletter sign-up, and more. This show is available on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play Music, SoundCloud, Player FM, Pocket Cast, and Stitcher. For more about the companies involved in making this possible, check out Salt.io, www.salt.io, and Leader193, www.leader193.com. Tune in next Thursday for the next Leadership in Tech podcast, our 34th episode, presented to you by the Technology OnRamp.
Tell me what to do, and I'd gladly do my job, but I don't like your attitude. I don't like your attitude.